Gregory Bay versus Craig Hanks.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. The Court has appointed me to represent Lawrence Gregory Bay, who is an Indiana prisoner who filed this 2254 petition for writ of habeas corpus back in 1994. Mr. Bay was convicted in the Superior Court of Marion County, Indiana, of murder and robbery, and ultimately was sentenced to 200 years in prison. This case has a very unusual procedural history, unique to my experience, and so unique that I will rest on my brief unless the Court has specific questions regarding the procedural history.
I have one question. There were three involved in this robbery murder, weren't there?
I believe two.
What happened to the other one?
Well, no one was ever charged with it other than Mr. Gregory Bay.
So the other guy got away?
They both got away, Your Honor, yes.
My
client does not assume he's guilty. I'm sorry. Yes, the other man got away, and Mr. Bay has always asserted his innocence.
So no one else is prosecuted?
That's true, yes. The issue I will...
And let me just ask one other question.
Surely.
In terms of the brief that he tried to file that got rejected, in that brief, he raised the identification issue and the competence of counsel question, didn't he?
Yes, he tried to raise it, and the Indiana Supreme Court sent the brief back to him, would not even accept his motion to file. So he had no way to raise this prior to the disposition of the direct appeal, which was a week after this court's initial opinion in this case, which allowed him to raise all of the, which directed the district court to consider the petition on the merits. And in the district court, he clearly raised the identification issue, even though that was not for some reason raised on the direct appeal. The issue I want to argue this morning is the ultimate issue of whether the in-court identification of Mr. Gregory by three of the witnesses was tainted by the out-of-court pretrial identification procedures. And this is a case which is almost a textbook on how you can make a pretrial identification process a violation of due process. You have a number of witnesses who observed a horrible crime. And I want to emphasize that perhaps the first problem with this case is how horrible the crime was. The desire, not only by the people in Indianapolis, but by the McDonald's Corporation, to find the perpetrators of the murder of Mr. Bible. But what happened then was that the witnesses, over a period of 3 months, were shown various photographic displays, which included the photograph of this man, Gregory Bay. And in one instance, Ms. Blakely, I think, was showed five separate photographic arrays, which at least some of which, if not all of which, included the picture of the petitioner. And she could not identify him. She identified him in the sixth presentation. And every one of the witnesses failed to identify him in at least two of the photographic arrays before they were ultimately identified. And while there is an issue about the quality of the photographs, we then go to the other primary basis for the out-of-court identifications, which was the lineup. At the lineup, only one of the witnesses identified Gregory Bay immediately. Then the witnesses conferred with the prosecutor, after which two more of the women who viewed the armed robbers identified Gregory Bay. And what you have here is a series of out-of-court identification procedures which were unconstitutionally suggestive. You see the multiple submissions of the photograph of the petitioner. You see the police officers suggesting in various points to various witnesses that others have identified a photograph from among the array. You see the witnesses getting together right after the crime to collaborate on a description and the development of sketches of the perpetrators.
Is that wrong?
Yes, it is wrong.
It is wrong for the police to call in the different witnesses to link up an identification?
No. It is improper to have all of the witnesses sitting together around a table with a sketch artist to agree in a collaborative manner what the suspect looked like.
Do you have any case law that sustains that theory?
Yes, I believe they are cited in the brief in terms of collaborative development of description.
No, but I'm talking about a specific case where they are joined together to draft a ID picture that they can publish.
Yes, I'm almost certain there is at least one case. It's an out-of-circuit case, but it's from one of the other circuits in which that specific...
Well, don't waste your time.
Okay,
I'm
almost certain
tell
it is.
Us after.
I will, Your Honor. Thank you. And then at the lineup itself, the witnesses were together observing the various people in the lineup. They were close enough to talk to one another, and they did talk to one another. They talked to one another about what they were observing. That, again, is one of the things you don't do. You can have 10 witnesses observe the same lineup, but you can't have them together where they can discuss what it is they saw. Then after the lineup, when only one of the witnesses identified Mr. Gregory Bay as being the suspect, they got together and they talked about what they had seen. They met with the prosecutor, and then two of the women later that day or the next day said, well, we really were afraid to identify the person we think it was, but we now say that we did identify Gregory Bay out of the lineup. But that was after the collaboration together, after the conferences with the prosecutor. And it's important to emphasize, I'm not suggesting that these witnesses were lying. I'm suggesting that this whole process, from almost the day of the crime until 10 and a half months later when the case was tried, provided these witnesses with such a suggestive process that by the time of the trial, they did think that the man they were identifying was the perpetrator. And that's the real error in Judge Hamilton's judgment in this case. Judge Hamilton found that at least two of the witnesses were subjected to unconstitutional out-of-court pretrial identification procedures, but that all of the witnesses' in-court identification was untainted by those processes. And I submit that's wrong. That's a legal issue which is subject to de novo review, particularly in a case prior to the Anti-Terrorism Act, as this is. And the reason for that is that it is impossible for an individual who has been subjected to multiple photographic arrays, collaborative identification procedures, a lineup at which there was discussion prior to most of them making the identification, to then come into court 10 months later and say, I am absolutely certain that this is the man who did it, particularly when some of them had already seen exactly the same person in a lineup and could not identify him. And that was 3.5 months after the crime.
Could their recollection improve over time? No, I'm just trying to say all the information that they have gained from three or four looking at these, observing these photos, which it's agreed that were not very clear or as clear as they might be.
That's true.
Isn't it true that these witnesses might then say, now I am convinced, after they themselves mull it over in their own mind?
I suppose that is conceivable, but then you have to remember that they didn't identify Mr. Gregory Bay in the lineup, which was after they saw the clearer photo.
I understand that. I'm talking about at the time of the trial.
Sure, I guess that's possible, but you have to look at the totality of the circumstances. That's the test. And my submission is on the totality of the circumstances here. Judge Hamilton erred on the question of whether the in-court identifications were tainted by the pretrial procedures, and for that reason, Mr. Gregory Bay is entitled to the issuance of a writ of habeas corpus. Thank you, Your Honor.
Trial, would that be your suggestion?
Well, I mean, Yes, I mean, that's technically the remedy, but they don't have any, if I'm right, then they don't have any witnesses. So, yes, thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel.
May it please the Court. This Court should affirm the District Court's denial of habeas relief because the District Court correctly considered the totality of the circumstances in analyzing the witness identifications at issue in this case and decided that those identifications were in fact reliable.
One thing I would like to clear up, how old were these various witnesses? A lot of times McDonald's has pretty young people. Do you know their ages?
Your Honor, I'm not able to tell you for the specific witnesses exact ages, but I recall that one witness at the time, I believe, was 25 years old. Another witness, I believe, was in her mid-20s. They were all falling between, I think, early 20s to 30 years of age, the four women were.
And let me ask you this. Do you dispute Judge Hamilton's findings that at least as to two of the witnesses, the identification procedure was unduly suggested?
Your Honor, on this appeal, we are not disputing that finding. However, I think that the record shows that although the District Court may have been warranted in making that finding, the indicia of suggestiveness that led to that finding are not as egregious as have been characterized by petitioner. I know the petitioner has not alleged bad faith on behalf of the authorities.
Tell us why they aren't.
Because, Your Honor, there were some good reasons for some of the things that happened.
Tell us why.
Yes, Your Honor. The repeated showing of the photographs had to do with the poor quality of the original photograph that was obtained of petitioner. There was what one of the officers referred to in the motion in limine, a quickie photo obtained after the officers had received an anonymous tip. No, it wasn't an anonymous tip. I'm sorry. Let me correct myself there. It was a tip from a confidential informant that Gregory Bay had been involved in the robbery. So they obtained a quickie photo for a quick display of a photo array or a stack of photos to the witnesses. And this photo was of extremely poor quality. It was only until a clearer representation of that same photograph was showed to the witnesses that the witnesses made positive photo identification. So the repeat showings were not for the purpose of suggesting to the witnesses that, yes, this individual keeps reoccurring in the arrays or in the loose stack, and that therefore this must be someone you should pick, but rather the repeat showings. And although Catherine Blakely was shown photos on five occasions, approximately five, possibly six, including the final one where she initialed the form picking Mr. Gregory Bay, the record does not show that Mr. Gregory Bay's photo was included in each of those presentations. It does not exclude that possibility.
Well,
but
the photo arrays weren't preserved, so we don't know what was shown. We just have the loose photos.
That's a problem.
The envelope. So we don't know what each witness was shown, at what time, do we?
That's correct, Your Honor. The only record support for what happened in that regard would be the testimony of the officers that showed the photos, and that testimony, as you've alluded to, is not concrete. It doesn't pin anything down with any
And so if you're not conceding on, I mean, you are conceding with respect to the two witnesses that the judge found were subject to unduly suggestive displays, and then that leaves Catherine Blakey, who was shown the photos a number of times and could not identify him. And in fact, when she looked at the final color photo, did she identify him?
Yes, she did, Your Honor. And Patrice Hampton also was found. The pretrial identification procedures used in working with her to get a pretrial identification were also found by the District Court not to be unduly suggestive.
And isn't she one of the ones that said that they couldn't pick him out of the lineup? She IDs him in the color photo but sees the lineup and doesn't pick him out that day?
That's true also, Your Honor. Again, that is another example of something that it's difficult to argue that definitely bears the mark of impropriety. But there's a good explanation for that as well, which was that when the women were viewing the lineup, the three that declined to identify the petitioner in the first instance all expressed a fear that the persons that were being displayed in the lineup could actually view them as they viewed the suspects and as they made their choices as to who was the person they recognized from the robbery.
And isn't that kind of suspect, too? I mean, that all three would call back the next day and all three would have the same position, that I was concerned that the witness could see me, and so, I mean, that the potential suspect could see me, and so therefore I didn't identify him, but then all called back the next day with the same story.
Well, two of the witnesses, Your Honor, made a representation after the lineup when talking with the prosecutor that, yes, that man was there.
Wasn't that the next day, though?
They did not
talk to, they didn't tell the, I mean, there wasn't a situation where they see the lineup, they say, no, we can't identify him, and then, you know, 5 or 10 minutes later, they say, oh, that was the guy. Doesn't this happen the next day? They call in?
Actually, and forgive me if this is not a completely accurate recollection from the record, but I believe Patrice Hampton is the only one who maintained that, no, she couldn't identify anyone the day of the lineup, and then she corrected that by calling, I believe, Deputy Prosecutor Cook the next day. I think that both witnesses Grinter and Graham made a representation to the prosecutor after viewing the lineup that they did recognize the person involved in the robbery, but they had just failed to positively identify
him. I think it was Grinter talked to the other witnesses before the lineup about the fact that they had identified the same photo, but she didn't identify Bay at the lineup. And then after the lineup, Grinter talked to Graham and Graham's mother about the lineup and told Graham he was up there, and later Grinter watched the video of the lineup and identified Bay. So that didn't occur on the same day.
That's correct, Your Honor. That's correct. Nothing more was done on the same day when the witnesses made this revelation to the prosecutor after declining to identify Mr. Gregory Bay. What they did was they scheduled depositions for those witnesses, and they reviewed the lineup on videotape and then made their selections. And regardless of the indicia of suggestiveness in the pretrial identifications, the district court correctly and properly applied the five-factor Biggers test to the in-court identifications and found that they were reliable regardless of the suggestive pretrial identification procedures that it found were used with Grinter and Graham, and indeed found that to be the case with all four witnesses as applied the test to all four. And in looking at the factors, which are the opportunity to view the witness, the opportunity to view the suspect, the level of attentiveness that the witnesses were able to maintain while they observed him, the accuracy of prior descriptions, and the certainty, overwhelmingly favor the reliability of the identifications. And
when you refer to level of certainty, are you speaking of when they were in trial, at trial? Because that certainly was the only time it was conclusively certain, with the exception of one witness who identified the color photo.
All of the witnesses identified the color photo in an array positively. And then,
that's right, you're right.
And then in the lineup, the three declined out of fear.
Right, that's the sequence. They identified the color photo, but then in the lineup, three of them didn't identify him.
That's correct. And the record is quite clear, though, that those three witnesses asserted that they were sure that the man was in the lineup and didn't do so out of fear, and the district court credited that. I wanted to bring out a point about the composites and the witnesses' efforts to compile the composites, and that was that the initial descriptions by the witnesses on the day of the robbery, now Catherine Blakely did not provide one, she just said that the suspect was dark-skinned, but the other three witnesses gave very reasonably consistent descriptions of the defendant, which were also fairly accurate descriptions of his appearance at the time of the robbery. Now, given that that was their initial mental image of the defendant, the subsequent rendering of the composite drawings doesn't show that there was any deviation from their initial impression. Finally, addressing the time factor, as petitioner has stated, there was about a 3.5 month period before the initial photo identifications. Definitely, if the time period had been shorter, that would go more towards the reliability than the time factor that we can assert or that the record supports. However, given the overwhelming support for the reliability of the in-court identification through the other four factors, this marginally lengthy period of time did not undercut the reliability that was found by the district court.
And what's the lapse between the time the crime was committed and the actual in-court identification?
I believe between the crime to the actual in-court identification was 11 months, Your Honor.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
I just have three very brief comments. I don't allege that the prosecutor or the police operated in bad faith. That's not a necessary requirement for finding the procedure was constitutionally suggestive, but I would point out that what occurred in this case violated some standards that have existed as long as there's been a due process right to a fundamentally fair lineup, such as having the witnesses together, having them talk together, having collaboration on identifications. And while that's not the same as bad faith, it certainly is not the standard operating procedure. Regarding the color photo versus the other photo of Mr. Gregory Bay, I would remind the court that Ms. Blakey was shown photos 5 times before she identified the petitioner, Hampton 3 times, and Ginther and Graham 2 times each. If indeed the problem was the quality of the photo, they were apparently showing the same photo repeatedly over a period of time. It wasn't that they showed it once and then showed a better picture. So seeing that my time is up, I ask the judgment be reversed. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. We will proceed to